If you were here last week, you can exhale a little bit. Breathe your sigh of relief. Last week was the tough sermon. It was talking about how God can't use one certain kind of heart. That would be those divided hearts, those hearts that can't give themselves to God. And the good news is I'm done with the hard part. Now we're going to talk about all the other kind of hearts there are. And guess what? God could use every single one of them. So that means as we go through the next few weeks, one of these apostles that we're going to look at and the groups of apostles we're going to look at, one of them you're going to look at and say, you know, that kind of sounds like me. And the good news is guess what? That means God can use you. And so this morning we're going to start with, well, the impulsive heart. Now, when I say the word impulsive, what that means is acting or done without forethought. Now, when we were in Charlottesville, we had this couple that showed up at our church. Their last name was Zawatsky. And they showed up there. They were the same age as Deborah and myself. As a matter of fact, Jennifer Zawatsky and Aaron Zawatsky Jennifer Zawatsky and Deborah Zawatsky, Deborah Creasy, I'll get it right in a second, shared the exact same birthday. So they were the exact same age, but when they told their story about how they got to Charlottesville, they were both nurses, and it's my understanding nurses can find jobs just about everywhere. So they literally hung a map on the wall and threw a dart. And then the city that it landed on was, the state it landed on was the state they decided they were going to send applications to. And then the hospital that hired them first was where they were going to live. Now, that's impulsive. When they got to Charlottesville, Virginia, they knew absolutely nobody in town. They had no connections whatsoever, no church background as far as they were from opposite sides of the realm as far as what kind of churches they were raised up in. He was raised Catholic, and she was raised Church of Christ. So they were kind of a mix and a hodgepodge, and they just showed up, and let me tell you something. They were the two most impulsive people I've ever met in my entire life, and they drove me crazy. Literally, because this is not my heart. I am not an impulsive person. Because impulsive people, there are some bad things about them. Just so you know, they bounce around a lot. Man, they move from thing to thing to thing to thing to thing. And if somebody that just drives you crazy, I exhaust thee. That exhausts me to have somebody that moves around like that. They tend to not finish what they start. These are people that have fantastic initiative, but sometimes lack any finishative. They get things started, and as soon as they get it started, well, then they see the next thing, and, well, that looks good, so I think I'll go do that. And so if you have an impulsive heart, they usually aren't the people that you want to put in charge of long-term projects, because it's just not their thing. They're not what you would call resource-friendly. Now, this is what I mean by that. When they come up with an idea of what they want to do and how things are supposed to work, they never consider how many people it would take or how much money it would cost. All they care about is, well, this sounds good to me, and you know what? Let's just go, and we'll figure out the budget and the people as we're going. If you know me, that is alter ego from the way I work things out. But it's not necessarily a terrible thing, but they just don't consider all of the ins and outs as they're moving along. They overcommit themselves. Yeah. Impulsive people like to have their hands in everything. And so as things are going on, like, yeah, I want to do that, and I want to do that too, and I want to do this too, and I want to do this too. And first thing you know, they've got their entire plate, and they're all stressed out because they've got too much to do. And you say, well, I'd like you to give up something. I don't want to do that. As a matter of fact, I see something else I want to do because it's just what feeds them. They're impulsive. And because of that, they can create some chaos. Now, I say that, but you have to realize that it's not all bad. When you have an impulsive heart, while there are things that we have to think about, there are some really good things about impulsive people that I tell you, ministers love impulsive people. Because guess what? They're usually self-motivated. Man, you just give them a spark of an idea, and the first thing you know, you got a fire. I mean, they can take little bitty things, and they turn it into great big things. That's what they are. They're impulsive people, and they just tend to go. And you know what? They're available people. Impulsive people You don't have to inspire a lot. You just have to get them going, because you know what? They're the kind of people, they are always there. They're always around. They're always willing to raise their hand and say, sure, I'll do that. Even if they don't have a clue what they're doing, they'll at least give it a try. They're available people. They're spontaneous. Now, I listed that on the good thing, but I know where I fit in the realm of things, and spontaneity is another one of those things that drives me crazy. You know, I could not be a spontaneous vacation person where you just pick up your luggage and you decide where you're gonna vacation after you get there. My mom and dad used to travel like that. They would say, we're going for a drive, and where are you going? I don't know, we'll figure it out when we get there. I'm like, no, you go for a drive, you have a destination. No, that's not the way it works, because they were just doing something impulsively and spontaneous. They don't require a lot of questions. You know, when they get something started, they don't have to have all the details and all the nitty-gritty. They don't have to understand how A connects to C. They just have to know what B is. And so they just kind of go, and it's a great thing. So there are some positive attributes to this heart. And just so you know, there are a couple verses that these people are going to struggle with. Yeah, they don't like this one. Wait for the Lord. Be strong and take heart and wait for the Lord. They're not waiters. Impulsive people don't want to wait for anything. They want it done, and they want it done now. And if you can't get it done now, don't worry about it. I'll do it for you, and we'll worry about the consequences afterwards. So waiting on the Lord is not one of their things. And the other thing that is not their thing is this thing in Psalm 46:10. He says, be still. Yeah, right. And know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. And so you have this idea that these people, they're never still. They always seem to have something going on. I guess maybe in that respect, I kind of have that in common with them, but it's not really, I'm not a still person, because I've got everything planned. Like I said, I have to-do lists for my to-do lists. So that's just the way it works. But these people are never still. They always need input. They always need something to feed them, because they don't know how to be still. And when we begin to talk about impulsiveness, and we're thinking, how on earth could God ever use a heart like that that's just here and there and fluttering around like a butterfly? Understand, he picked one for his team. Not only did he pick one for his team, he picked the leader of his team as an impulsive heart. When Jesus went out there and he picked the 12 disciples that we later called the 12 apostles, Peter made the cut. Now, who is Peter? Well, Peter was born on the banks of the Jordan River in a small town called Bethsaida. Peter was a fisherman by trade. And now when I hear that, I don't think fishing and impulsiveness go together, because I've been fishing before. And there is nothing impulsive about fishing, because you put the line in the water and you just sit there and you just wait. Well, that's not the kind of fishing Peter was doing. Peter was a big commercial fisherman. He didn't fish with a line and a reel. He was fishing with a net. So that required you to throw it out and wait a few seconds and pull it back in, and throw it out and wait a few seconds to pull it back in. So I could see very much how fishermen of those times, with that impulsive nature, fit that. Well, Peter was a fisherman. Peter was an older brother. He had a little brother named Andrew. We'll meet him in a few weeks. And he is the only apostle mentioned in the Bible. Here's your Bible trivia for the day. He was married. The others might have been married. We don't know. But it specifically did say that Peter had a mother-in-law. And so it kind of goes to reason that if you have a mother-in-law, then guess what? There's got to be a wife there somewhere. It's just the way it works. So we do know that Peter was absolutely married. Now, again, sometimes impulsiveness and marriage don't go together very well anyway, but could you imagine how Peter was looked at when he came home and told his wife, hey, you know that fishing thing I've been doing for years? I've decided to go do something else. And she's like, hold on. What's going to happen now? Because, you see, Peter definitely had this impulsive nature. There are three stories that we can look at in the Bible that show off this impulsive nature. The first one is found in Matthew chapter 16, and we're all familiar with this story, because in Matthew chapter 16, Jesus tells Peter the plan, and he says, this is how it's going to work. And he said, not so, Lord. Not so. He just always was there, and he was always the first apostle to speak up. He was always the one that was correcting Jesus. because that's the way it worked. Peter impulsively, his mouth just kind of went. There's the story that we all read at Easter time when they come to arrest Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. And there is Peter, and as they begin to arrest him, what does Peter do? Well, remember, here's a big group of people with torches and swords. So Peter pulls out his sword and slices off a man's ear, not thinking, in fact, what that's going to cause. He just saw the situation and he just reacted to it. That's the impulsive nature. We have Peter right after the resurrection. We're familiar with this story. He's gone fishing yet again because he's trying to sort through all that had happened. And he looks up and there's Jesus standing on the shore. And what does Peter do? Jumps in the water, clothes and all. Doesn't think it through. Doesn't have a plan. Doesn't know what he's going to do when he gets to shore. Doesn't know how he's going to handle the guards after he slices off a man's ear. Doesn't know how he's going to handle the response from Jesus. He doesn't think about any of that. He is just going to kind of be impulsive. Now, his ministry is quite an interesting ministry. Outside of the Bible, there's a lot that we can find out about Mr. Peter. So I've got some facts here that I just want to read you to let you see just how deep his ministry goes. Because we read the book of Acts, and it is kind of flat. You know, we see one event happening right after the other, and we don't really understand the time that's passed. After Christ's resurrection and ascension, Peter stayed in Jerusalem for the next 10 years. Years preaching and worshiping with other followers of Jesus. The book of Luke records that his preaching was accompanied by many miracles and healings. They didn't all happen in one day. Those acts brought him to the attention of the Sanhedrin. They tried to stop Peter and his disciples from preaching and practicing miracles in the same name of Christ, but you know what? Peter paid no attention to them. They continued on preaching. In fact, this caused Peter to get put in jail and beat multiple times. And then in AD 42-43, Peter was arrested yet again on the orders of the new governor, Agrippa. Once more, divine intervention saved him, and he escaped the city and is known to preach throughout Asia Minor, Corinth, Antioch, where he stayed for 7 years. And you get that. There's a 10-year stay, and there's a 7-year stay. Finally, he ended up in Rome, where he began to convert the local Jewish population until disaster struck on July 19, 64, when Rome was burned to the ground. Peter was arrested, and tradition holds that he was kept for 9 months in prison. Peter requested to be crucified upside down. Here's the thing. Nobody really knows why. I know what church legend says, that he said he didn't want to be crucified the same way as Jesus, but the truth is, that's never given. We never know why he was asked to do that. And so when we look at his ministry, we don't really see this impulsive nature. So the question becomes is, how does God take this impulsive man and make him new into a leader of God's church? How can God take an impulsive heart and turn it into something that God can use in a consistent ministry? Well, he kind of has to do some reshaping. He has to do some remaking. And I think Jesus could see Peter's heart all the way from the beginning, because right at step one, Jesus started making Peter brand new. As a matter of fact, Peter was not his name. He was given a new name the moment Jesus met him. John chapter 1, verses 41 through 43 says, the first thing Andrew being baby brother of Peter, was to find his brother Simon and tell him, we have found this Messiah, that is the Christ. And he brought him to Jesus. Jesus looked at him and said, you are Simon, son of John. You will be called Cephas, which is translated Peter. So right off the bat, Jesus is making a distinction that, Peter, I see your heart, but you are not who you say you are. Because in that impulsive heart, Jesus saw rock, which is what Peter means. He could look at Peter's heart, and he says, there is something there in that impulsive nature of yours that I can build on. And that's what he did. Because you know what? He had to give Peter a new walk. This is what we read in Matthew chapter 14, verses 28 through 31. Remember the situation here? They're out on a boat. There's been storms and wave crashing, and everything is going on. And all of a sudden, they look up, and there is a ghost coming toward them, they think. And they're all afraid, and then they realize it's Jesus. And who speaks up? Peter. Because Not thinking about the consequences. Not thinking about how it's supposed to work. This is what he said. Lord, if it's you, Peter replied, tell me to come out to you on the water. Huh, that's a big step. Literally. Come, he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat and walked on the water and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and beginning to sink, cried out, Lord, save me. Immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. You have little faith. Why did you doubt? You see, Peter was so impulsive and he got so excited and he saw Jesus walking on the water. And guess what he said? I want to try that. That looks cool. I've been floating on this water all of my life. I've been fishing these waters. How cool would it be to walk on the water? He says, hey, Lord, Jesus, hey, if that's really you, I want to come out there and do that with you. And Jesus didn't scold him. Jesus didn't correct him. He didn't give him a theological lesson or a lesson about gravity. What did he say? Your heart wants to do it? Come on. You see, that's the way you use an impulsive heart. When the impulsive heart says, I want to give it a try, Jesus said, sure, come on. Now, he does get himself in some trouble because he didn't think it through, and he began to pay attention to the waves, and he began to pay attention to all the things going on around him, and his impulsive heart began to think. And it took its focus off of Jesus. And that's the point at which Jesus corrected him. You see, that's what you have to remind the impulsive heart. You can't have little faith. You've got to stay focused on what is the faith. Jesus. He had to teach him how to walk in faith, not by what was going on around him, not by what he saw. It was a brand new kind of walk because the impulsive heart is going to need that. He had to give him a new calling. This is what we read in Luke chapter 5, verses 10 through 11. Then Jesus said to Simon, don't be afraid. From now on you will fish for people. So they pulled their boats up on the shore and left everything and followed him. So up until this point that we read in Luke chapter 5, Peter had been a fisherman fishing for little fish in the water. And Jesus said, you know what? Those skills, those impulsive skills of casting the net out and dragging the fish in, of casting the net out and dragging the fish in, I want you to take that kind of attitude and put it out to people. Allow your impulsive nature to work just like God created it. Peter, just cast the net out there. And everybody that gets caught in the net, drag them on back in and teach them about me. See, this is what an impulsive heart can do. Because Peter understood the idea of casting and dragging. He understood he didn't want to patiently wait for people, but he does understand about pulling people in. And if you read through the book of Acts, that's Peter. But Jesus had to point out this new calling for him. I'm not asking you to change everything about you. I'm just asking you to take what there is about you and give it to me, and I'll use it just like it is. We'll go fishing for people together, Peter, if you'll just allow me to use your heart. He had to give him some new understanding. Now, this is hard, because remember, Peter was a grown adult at this point. We're going to be in Luke chapter 9 for this little section. And a grown adult, as you get older, I have learned this, you think you know more. Notice I put the word think in there. You know, and you begin to think that you've got all of life's experience and that you understand how things are supposed to work. So then when somebody comes along with something new, there's resistance to it. Well, Jesus had to give Peter this lesson. Once when Jesus was praying in private and his disciples were with him, he asked them, who did the crowd say that I am? So this is an honest question. He's looking at them and saying, okay, who do people say I am? I mean, you guys are out there. You got your finger on the pulse of the nation. You hear the gossip in the streets. Who is it that people say Jesus is? They reply. Some say John the Baptist. Others say Elijah. And still others, one of the prophets of long ago, have come back to life. So they give them the report that people are giving them rumors and that it's fairy tale kind of stories that Elijah's been resurrected or Elisha's been resurrected or maybe it's Isaiah that's been resurrected or John the Baptist who had been beheaded at this point had been resurrected. That Jesus is the resurrection of somebody else. By the way, the John the Baptist thing I don't get because that means Jesus would have had to baptize Jesus. Anyway, that doesn't work. It doesn't make sense. But anyway, people were having all of these rumors about who he was and then he makes the question, but what about you, he asked. Who do you say I am? Now, keep in mind, this question was asked to the group. And at the beginning, it says they replied. So when it was, who do the people say that I am? Then everybody out there gave Jesus the opinion of the people. But when it was time to say, who do you say I am? Guess who opened his mouth? Yep. Good old impulsive Peter. Right off the bat. He said, God's Messiah. You're God's Messiah. And he began to take that, and Jesus said, you know what, Peter, you got the answer right. Congratulations, Dean, you won the game. But understand, this isn't from what you understand. God has revealed this to you. You see, when Peter said God's Messiah, we think about the crucifixion. Understand, Peter was thinking about the king. When he called him God's Messiah, Peter was literally saying, the person who owns my heart, because you are the chosen one of Israel, come to save his people. That's important. Because Peter's impulsive heart, as impulsive as it is, understands it's not in charge. God's Messiah is in charge. And he was identifying Jesus with that person. And so now we have this idea that Peter realizes he's not going to be in charge. Now, that doesn't stop him. I mean, there are several times going throughout it that Jesus is trying to teach Peter something, and Peter steps up and says, you got it all wrong. Remember the washing of the feet? As Jesus came around and washed each disciple's feet, he got to Peter. Would Peter say, no, Jesus, not mine. Nope, never, not going to happen. And then Jesus explains to him, unless I wash your feet, you can't have any part of me. Well, then Peter said, fine, give me a bath. I want it all. But that's the impulsive nature of Peter. So it wasn't that he made this proclamation, and all of a sudden it was this aha moment, but understand what's happening. Peter's heart is beginning to be molded. Now, this is still the same heart that's going to deny Christ. This is still the same heart that's going to be challenged all throughout his life as far as his ministry goes. But it's beginning to be molded. His impulsive nature, he's being taught to be impulsive for God. And let me tell you something. I've met those people, and those are powerful people. Those people that have an impulsive nature for God, they're great. Peter had to get a new vision, though. Now, this is important, because Peter had lots of opinions about how things were supposed to work. He did. I mean, he had left his fishing business, and you know what? He was supposed to be one of these great men now, and Jesus was going to be king, and he was going to be there, and he was going to have his own little territory. And I'm sure Peter had this great plan about how his investment in God's kingdom was going to be monetarily successful for him. Of course, at the point we pick up the story in Matthew chapter 17, Jesus has been crucified. Peter has denied Jesus. The tomb is now empty. Peter is struggling. And this is where we pick it up. After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, the brother of James, and led them to the mountain. I got the wrong place. We'll go to that next one. Sorry. The new vision, the transfiguration. I skipped the point. I'm terribly sorry. You'll have to hold that little build-up. I'll get to that in a second. After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, and brother of James, and led them up to a high mountain by themselves. There he was transfigured before him, his face shone like sun, and his clothes became white as light, and they appeared before them, Moses and Elijah, talking with Jesus. Peter said, Jesus, Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will put up shelters for one of you, one for Moses and one for Elijah. While he was still speaking, a bright cloud covered them, and a voice from the cloud said, this is my son, whom I love, and well pleased. Listen to him. At this moment, Jesus wanted Peter to see who he really was physically. But just for a moment, in that impulsive heart, he pulled the curtain back and gave Peter a peek. And what does impulsive Peter say? I like this. Let's stay right here. Matter of fact, I'll build you a temple. I'll build you a little shrine. We can just stay here on the mountain, just me, you. And of course, you get the, listen to him, Peter. Close your impulsive mouth for just a second. And just listen. So we need to have that moment when Peter had to learn how to listen instead of just acting. Still not to the side of the mountain there at the end because he had to get a new order. When he had finished washing their feet, see, got my little scripture that goes with my story. When they were washing his feet, they put on his clothes and returned to his place. Do you understand what I have done for you, he asked? You called me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that the Lord and teacher have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. So after Jesus went around and washed all of their feet, and Peter had made such a bit to do, he looked at them and said, now, understand how this is supposed to work. You are not here to be served. You are here to serve. You are not here to have somebody take care of you. The order works this way. The higher you are up in the Christian faith, the more responsibility you have to serve people. Fathom that thought. The higher you are up in the Christian faith, and I don't like to make pyramids, but it's an upside-down pyramid. Because really, it's the lower you are and the more people that you have to serve. This is great words for our elders, because guess what? When you accept an eldership, you're accepting the responsibility of the flock. That means all of the spiritual problems of the church, they tend to congregate right there at you. That means when you accept the responsibility for a ministry, guess what? That ministry, all of those problems come down to you because you are accepting responsibility. A lot of times we think a title in the church makes me somebody. Understand, a title in the church makes you accountable to somebody, because that's what it's all about. And in an impulsive nature, Peter had to learn this lesson. You're not here to be served. You are here to serve. And that is a lesson that I think a lot of times we forget in the church. We are not here to be served. Now we get to where I was going, the new shepherd. You remember my build-up, right? We're right there by the ocean. Peter's denied Christ. He's sitting there, and he's got to give Peter one more lesson. He's going to take a fisherman and teach him how to be a shepherd. Now, you understand the difference, right? When the fisherman catches the fish, what does he do with it? He kills them. Unless he throws them back. He kills them. He's going to eat them. He is going to consume them or sell them to be consumed. A shepherd does not eat sheep, because that's called profit loss. As a matter of fact, the shepherd is there to take care of the sheep, because the idea is that the sheep are valuable, because he's not after the meat of the sheep, he's after the wool. So Jesus had to give impulsive Peter this lesson, and this is the lesson. When they had finished eating, Jesus said to Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? I guess Peter had learned something, because he changed the words around. Yes, Lord, he said, you know that I love you. Jesus said, feed my lambs. Again, Jesus said to Simon, son of John, do you love me? He answered, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus said, take care of my sheep. The third time he said to him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt because Jesus asked him a third time, do you love me? He said, Lord, you know I love you above all of these. And what did he say? Take care, feed my sheep. You see, feed my lamb. So he had this idea that he's retraining Peter, take your focus off of yourself, because if you're going to be an impulsive heart for me, it's all about the sheep. It's all about the lambs. It's all about the feeding. It's all about the taking care of. And you know what? Shepherds don't have a lot of time for themselves. Because guess what? Sheep are needy creatures. In this making anew, do you see what God is doing? See, the impulsive heart is a good thing, but we have to teach it to be active and not reactive. You see, when an impulsive heart gets into reactive mode, it is utter chaos, because they just react to every little thing that goes wrong, everything that happens, they bounce around. But you get an impulsive heart to stop reacting and just be active, you've got a powerful tool for God. You've got the man that led the apostles. You've got the man that led the early church. You've got the man that preached the first sermon. You've got the man that gave his life for Christ. Just because he stopped just reacting to what was going on around him, and he allowed his impulsive heart just to be active for God. You see, God says, got an impulsive heart? I can use that if you're willing to give it to me. by the fact that I skipped some verses and had to come back to them, I hope you got the picture this morning that God wants to use your heart, even if it's an impulsive heart. All he desires you to do is to surrender it to him. We're going to do a time of decision, and I want you to think about that. Have you surrendered your heart to God? Because that is what this sermon series is all about. God can use it if you're willing to give it. Don't think there's anything in your heart that God cannot put to use for his kingdom. Would you please stand? We're going to pray, and then we're going to finish.